Welcome everybody to another webinar in our One MSL community series. This is Helen Kane, CEO of One MSL, and I am really pleased to have you all joining us on this webinar topic, Handling Conflict with Confidence, which is going to be shared with us by the very talented and passionate Patricia Soler. I will let Patricia introduce herself in a moment, but we've been working together for a number of years, and I know this is a subject. We were just having a conversation before we came on air, and she said, really, this is something that I could talk about in my sleep. So I know it's going to be very fluid, very dynamic, and welcome to everybody who's joining us online. We hope that you'll participate lots with Patricia and with myself. And without any further ado, I'm going to hand over to Patricia.
Thank you very much, Helen. It's a pleasure for me to be here with all of you. So today we're going to talk about this handling conflict. I just want to make one little clarification. Even if Helen nicely said I could talk about it in my sleep, that doesn't mean I'm the best person in the world. You can ask my family at handling conflict. So that means that even if we have all the tools, we are still human beings, so we still have sometimes difficulties. But we're going to try to see how to handle that better or how to do that better. What is conflict for you? What do you think conflict is? What do we have to, why do we call a situation a conflict? So I would like to hear from you. What is conflict for you?
Yeah, I was just going to say opposing. I mean, I think the visual is very strong. You know, that's one, and that's very extreme representation of conflict. But sometimes it might not be quite as obvious, might it? It's a mental disagreement followed by there's another view on your chat. So you're seeing lots of chat here.
Yes, yes, yes. And you're totally right. That's the picture to represent like the idea of conflict we have sometimes in our mind. But it doesn't have to be like that. Helen says misalignment of views and beliefs, maybe. Different options. Naringa says a conflict is when people do not agree and have different views on the same subject. But as Helen said, it might be a obvious conflict where we're fighting against each other, but it might be a silent conflict where we don't even notice that there is a conflict from the outside, but the conflict exists. So it might be much more quiet than this. So let's dive in. This is the definition from the dictionary, a state of disharmony. It's a little bit everything what you said. This is not agreeing between incompatible or unethical persons. It doesn't need to be incompatible for everything, but for a specific thing, we do not agree. It's exactly what you were saying. And it might be ideas or interests in resumes like a clash, a difference. So now I have a question for you. Imagine, and I need you to use the chat, and that's an important question. Imagine that I represented conflict. So not that you have a conflict with me, but I am Patricia. If we were in the room together, not in a webinar, I will ask you to place yourselves around me. If I represented conflict, I am conflict, where will you place yourself? Would you place yourself really close to me, just at the safe distance, far from me, really far, or even like you don't even see me? So I'd like to hear from you. What is it for you? Where will you place yourself around conflict if you could choose? Yes, what is your comfortable position? So as you can see, we all have different ways of addressing conflict. Okay, Helen, depends upon the relationship and the topic. Totally, Helen. It's true. But still, there's a preference. There's some people that really, it's like, ugh, I hate like the people that wrote far from you. Then there's other people that are like, okay, no, in your face, like Adam saying, you know, I don't care. I just really want to face it so I get over with it. It's not right or wrong. It's not right or wrong. But my question to you now is, okay, no right or wrong. We don't know. But if you avoid conflict, I'm not talking if you avoid conflict with somebody that you will never see in your life, okay? But if you avoid conflict with somebody that it's important for you, like Helen was saying, depending on the relationship and the topic, does the conflict disappear? If we try to avoid it, like the conflict doesn't exist, we'll pretend that it's not there. Nope. Thank you. Thank you, Jen. No, 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 never. It doesn't. So let's have a look at how are we going to do that? How are we going to handle that? Can you give us tools so we can kind of understand and at least try to solve that? And Gaetano says, it depends if you wear a mask. You're right. Very good answer. So thank you for that. So now, before we keep going, I want you to think, because what we're going to do through this webinar, I want you to think about an actual conflict you have, something that is bothering you. Maybe it could be a conflict like it's been going on for a while, or maybe it's a new conflict, or maybe it could be a thing that if you say what you want to say, that's going to start a conflict, or at least you think it's going to start a conflict. So I want you to think about a specific situation, because through the webinar, we're going to keep working and build up on that and try to understand what can I do in this situation. I don't want you to think about a global thing, about a specific thing, specific conflict with a specific person. Again, might be going on, might be in the present, or might be in the next future. So I'm going to be quiet and I'll let you think. So I have now a video for you. I have a video for you to just start with a touch of humor in regards to misunderstandings, because actually a lot of conflicts start with misunderstandings. So let's watch this video.
Nice to see you. What's happening?
Sir, I have the report here about the new leader of China.
Great. Lay it on me.
Who is the new leader of China?
That's what I want to know.
That's what I'm telling you.
That's what I'm asking you. Who is the new leader of China?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy in China.
Who?
The new leader of China.
Who?
The Chinaman.
Who is leading China?
Now what are you asking me for?
I'm telling you who is leading China.
Well, I'm asking you. Who is leading China?
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Will you or will you not tell me the name of the new leader of China?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yasser Arafat is in China. I thought he was in the Middle East.
That's correct.
Then who is in China?
Yes, sir.
Yasser is in China?
No, sir.
Then who is?
Yes, sir.
Yasser?
No, sir.
Look, Kundi. I need to know the name of the new leader of China. Get me the Secretary General of the UN on the phone.
So, Helen, have you ever been in a situation like that?
Not quite that extreme, but that is very clever, actually.
Yes, I actually think that in Spanish we have an expression for that, that it's called a dialogue of fishes. You know, like you do like, up, 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 and the other's like, up, 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 and we don't really get to listen to each other, and we're like saying the same things. Sometimes we are in those situations. We don't notice it, but sometimes when we see them from the outside, you're like, they're saying the same thing. Why are they even having a conflict? They're just repeating the same thing. So it was just a little note to show you that misunderstandings are a big cause of conflicts. Things that either we're not listening, and we'll talk about active listening at the end of this webinar, either we're not really listening, or either we're just like understanding what my previous experience is showing me, or I'm not really opening my head. I'm just seeing that what you're saying through my glasses, and that is what it makes the conflict. So the perfect situation now is to dive into the perception that we've all heard about, perception and the power of perception, because we all know that sometimes we're seeing the same thing, but we're interpreting different things. So, and the most important thing here is that all of our knowledge has its origins in perceptions. So whatever we think, the origin, it's like what we perceive, what the knowledge is in regards to what we are perceiving. So for me, this is what it's real. Your brain decides at every moment, what am I seeing now? So even if you see both, you first see one and then the other and then one and then the other. So it's maybe not even a second, less than a second. But you are, when your brain sees one, it doesn't see the other one. But then it switches. That's why some people have a difficulty to see that. I have another one. Because sometimes with perception, it's super clear when you see it from one side, but not that clear when you see it from the other side. So here, that's why we talked about empathy. Like we talk about empathy, we have to step in the other person's shoes to understand, oh my God, how do you see that? And in conflict, a lot of times, this is the problem. We only see our side.
We may disagree and both be right. So there you go, good news. Maybe that conflict you have, maybe that situation you have, you're both right, but you each have a different perception or a different perspective of the situation. And that's why you're in conflict. I've worked sometimes with couples where, you know, when I work with couples, you cannot work one against the other. I had somebody here in the chat that said, I'll be facing you. Yes, it's good because you're like, I'm not afraid, I'm facing the conflict. But sometimes it's good to put one beside the other and both look at the conflict. Instead of me against you, it's not me against you, it's us against that is separating us. So what is it? And when I work with couples sometimes, I've had people having a very difficult time, like the way they educate their kids. So for me, I'm more like free, like imagine, the wife was more like, let them be, let them express themselves. If they wanna go to bed later, that's okay. And the father more like, no, it has to be like that. They have to go at that determinate time. There has to be order in house. When they both looked at the conflict, they both realized that they had a common interest and both of them wanted the best for their kids. So I'm just giving you a silly example, but okay, it's just that each one had a different perception of what the best for their kids was. So that's how sometimes we trainers talk about the iceberg, and it's that the part of the iceberg we don't see. We only see the conflict outside, but not the big part. So let's move on. Think about that conflict you have. Maybe it's a difference of perception. Maybe you need to step more on the other person's shoes and they need to do the same thing with you. So now I just wanted to give you a little bit of a context of what communication is. The communication only happens, real communication, pure communication, simple communication only happens when we're both okay. So I can communicate with Heather because we're both okay. I can have a conversation with Luis because we're both okay. So we have a conversation, we talk about our kids, we talk about our things. This is communication. But what happens when I am not okay? I'm not okay in that situation, in that relationship. I'm talking about relationships, okay? But they are okay, you are okay, the other person is okay, but I am not. That's when my needs are not met. So it's my problem. So I need to develop that assertiveness. I need to be assertive, yes? And to define assertiveness, just one sentence. And if you have a pen and a paper, write down the sentence because I love that sentence. Being assertive is, before I say yes to others, I make sure I'm not saying no to myself. And we know a lot about that. Yes, Helen?
Yes.
When we tend and we like and we're pleasers and we like to make people happy and we forget about ourselves. So that's when we're not okay and we need to be assertive. Yes? So anyway, so that's when I don't feel okay, you feel okay, we need to be assertive and develop that. When they don't feel okay, when the other person in the relationship is not okay, but you're fine, you're perfect, that's when you need to use your empathy. And that's what I said from the beginning. Maybe the conflict, it's because that person is not okay and you're trying to avoid it, but this person is kind of trying to get you into the conflict. So maybe the problem is I need to listen more, and we'll see that at the end of the webinar, or I need to be more empathetic with that person. I need to step in their shoes. Remember that. Different sympathy from empathy. Empathy is I step on your shoes. I understand. I try to see things from your point of view. What are you living? And that's when I have to develop that. And the last one, clearly, if I am not okay, my needs are not met. You're not okay. Your needs are not met. That's when we have to handle conflict.
So Patricia, can I just ask you?
Of course, of course.
So I think this is a very simple and very clear visual, but actually, if we don't know someone that well, mm-hmm. how do we know if they don't feel okay? So you know, perception and listening is good, but sometimes just to say, are you okay?
Of course.
Is a really simple question, isn't it?
I love what you just said, Helen, because I always, and I totally agree with you. There is one thing I always say, we still as human beings cannot read each other's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Or can you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least not yet. I cannot. So I agree with Helen 100%. Instead of interpreting, instead of having the perception, we might ask, you know, or if you feel somebody, there's something going on, you don't know why, you might just ask if you need to understand if that person is really not okay or if they're okay. And sometimes we all know that. You might hear a, Yes, I'm okay. What does it mean? Yes, I'm okay. Well, sometimes depending on the tone, it's not really being okay. And we all have done that. So we know that we can say we're okay when we're not. But yes, Helen, totally. I agree 100% with you. So this is the idea. This is the context of communication. So for you to know, we're all both okay. We can communicate. I don't feel okay. But you feel okay, then I need to use my assertiveness, then I need to develop that because I need to stand up for myself. And then if they're not okay and I'm okay, then I need to listen to them and I need to step on their shoes. And finally, if none of us are okay, then that's when we need to handle the conflict. So let's keep thinking about that conflict that we had. It's like a little drawing that if I was with you, I could obviously do that, but not with the whiteboard because I'll do like a very weird design. But this is just a design that we use in nonviolent communication. For the ones that know what nonviolent communication is, there's no explanation needed. But from some other people, they'll be like, oh, but I'm not violent in my conflicts. Yeah, but it doesn't mean violent, like violence, or like we saw in the first picture I showed you when we talked about conflict. It's more about the words. You know that sometimes with our words, we might be violent, even if sometimes we're not a violent person, but our words might hurt. So that's why it's called nonviolent communication. How could we say things in a way that doesn't attack the other person? Because my question to you is, you feel attacked. So I go to Greg and I say, because I feel that he attacked me. And I go to Greg and say, you just attacked me. What am I doing?
Attacking him.
Exactly. And what do we do when we feel attacked?
Attack back, fight back, yes. or else run.
Or defend yourself, you know, get defensive. Exactly, Greg, get defensive, defend, exactly, Heather. So we just protect ourselves. So it is important to know this between you 22 and me. A lot of times I say things that I know I'm attacking and I know what the real result is going to be, but I can't help it. Okay, that happens sometimes with my husband. But anyway, otherwise, we know that when we say things in a determined way, what is it going to happen? Yes, because we know we're not saying it in a good way. We're attacking. So we're going to get a defensive reaction or an attack back. So here, my question to you is, who is responsible of what you think in your head? Me, Heather. Good. Sometimes it seems very obvious, but I have people a lot of times that say, well, yes, I'm in part responsible of what I think, but I have influences from people, my parents, my school, the news, the country where I live. This all is going to be also, they are all responsible also of what I think. Is that true? No, it's not true, Heather. Yes, you're right. It's not true. There is an influence, but at the end of the day, I decide what I think. So let me give you an example. I go to France a lot, and I use this example also in France. But imagine that when I was a child, I mean, I'm from Spain, my parents told me, never go to France. French people are not nice. So I think like, okay, so I'm never going to go to France. So time passes, life passes. I go to live in Belgium. I live in Belgium. I live here. And one time, you know, I have a friend or Helen comes and says, oh, Patricia, so how do you like Paris? And I'm like, oh, I've never been in Paris. Why? You know, because Paris is full of French people. I know, but what's wrong with French people? I mean, French people are not good people, but why would you say that? I know, my parents told me. I mean, how ridiculous is that? But that happens. You know, there's some people that have that thought and they really believe that thought and that they become, it becomes their thought, but they blame others for that thought. So what could I do so that thought is mine or not? What do you think I could do? Helen, that's a long answer. What do you think I could do?
With your thought, you can challenge your thought.
Exactly. And what could I do to challenge that thought? Experience for yourself. Exactly, Heather. Just go to friends, you know? And then I go to friends and I realize there's amazing people and there's stupid people, like in Spain, like in Portugal, like in the US, you know, like everywhere. So this thought, you can challenge, like Helen just said. Of course you can challenge. That's what you have to do. If they told me when I was little, oh, you're such a bad dancer, but I really want to be a dancer, I could just believe it and then never do anything around that. Or I could just challenge that thought and just try. Maybe I realize, you know, that I don't like dance so much. And that's why I'm not going to do it. So let's keep going. I said thoughts, you are responsible of your thoughts. But let's go to the feelings. So I know this one is harder, but my question is not who's responsible of your feelings, because you might think, well, if somebody just insults me now walking on the street, they are responsible of me feeling bad. Yes, but what I'm asking here is like, who's responsible of what you do with your feelings? If you let that person have an enormous influence in the rest of your year because they insulted you, or what do you do with that? Who's responsible for that? You are responsible. And let me give you an example. I might have a problem. I might have a problem at home. My husband leaves me, whatever. Of course, I'm going to be sad. And I will say, if my friend comes and asks me, why are you feeling like that? Well, you know, my husband left me and that's why I'm so sad. Yes, but at the end, in a year, in 2 years. So why are you still sad? Oh, because my husband is his fault. After 10 years, why are you sad? Because it's a fault of mine. I mean, come on. There's a moment where I need to take responsibility. That's where I'm going. And then the next one, it's very important, because who is responsible for fulfilling my needs? I know you know now. How many people you have that are expecting others to fulfill their needs? Like if it's their obligation, yes? Lots of conflicts start because of that. It's me and myself, yes, Eleni. And if I do, imagine, let me give you an example. I do have a need, and now this word, Helen, you correct me, for recognizement.
Recognition.
Okay, let me write it, because otherwise, I had two options: recognition. So I need recognition, and I'm expecting it, and it doesn't come. So I decide to leave my job because I never got this recognition. Some people do that. So what could I do if it's my responsibility? What do you think I could do? It's my responsibility because it's my need. Ask for it, Jen. Yes, make yourself heard. Exactly. I just go and say to my manager, in this case, imagine Helen, and I say, Helen, you know, I've been working here for 6 months and you've never said anything. What do you think about my work? For example, I'm inventing. And she might say three things, you know, oh my God, I'm sorry I didn't say anything. I'm so delighted with your work. I love it. Perfect. Makes me feel good. And please, sorry I didn't say, I have so much work. I forget about those important things. Always come to me if you need that. Perfect. But maybe I ask her and she's like, why would you ask me that? If I don't say anything, that means that everything's fine. I mean, I know Helen would not say that, but it could be a manager that says, if I don't say anything, that means that everything's okay. But that's okay. I get my recognition. I know that this person is happy with me. And the third option might be, not that happy with you. Still a good option, because thanks to me going there, I understood they're not happy with me. So anyway, there is a good outcome, because I'm going to understand what I have to do next. And the last one is, who's responsible for my actions? And my actions, obviously, in that I don't let you answer, I am responsible for my actions. But prisons are full of people not responsible for their actions. Somebody else pushed them to do that. And that's not true. We always have a choice. Always have a choice. I'm going to give you an example of Nelson Mandela. I love that example because he is kind of the master of this. He was in prison for 27 years, closed in a prison cell, small place, and he managed to leave in peace. I mean, at least try peace when he left prison after 26 years. In prison for what? Probably for him, it was injustice, but he was there and he left totally in peace. How did he do that? Well, actually, he understood that model, even if he probably didn't even know it, or maybe yes. But he thought, you know, they put me in prison, but my brain is free. And in my head, I'm free because I can write, I can think. So I'm free in my head. So that's what he thought. I am free in my head. That makes me feel good. My needs of being free are fulfilled. My actions is when I leave, I just want peace. I don't want more war and I don't want more fighting. And I don't want other people to be in prison. I just want peace. So this is what he did. And that's now for a simple example. Imagine that I get home and my dear husband, it's incredibly helpful to have him because he gives me lots of examples. So I get home and my husband brings me a big bouquet of flowers. And I do, why did he bring me flowers? What did he do? If I start thinking that, how would I feel? What do you think I would feel? I think, why is he bringing me flowers? My need of being, you know, respected, loved, it's not there. So my action is like, I can't believe you brought me flowers. They're gonna die anyway. I've never liked flowers. And he's thinking, oh my God, I'm just bringing her flowers. I never do that. And she's just making a bit of it and making a big deal. But imagine the other way. Imagine that he brings me flowers and I'm like, oh my God, he brought me flowers. Wow, he loves me so much. How do I feel? Of course I feel happy. My need of being, four languages of love, there you go. My need of being loved and respected, it's totally fulfilled. What is my action? So you know that it can have a very different outcome depending on what you put in your little head. And it might be a bad thing, but it's the way you interpret that. So let's move on. The next exercise I have, it's an exercise for you to think about that person that you have a conflict with. And we're going to use this model. But instead of attacking, like Helen said before, like if I attack you, what do? I attack back or I defend myself. So instead of doing that, I'm going to give you a guide to prepare a dialogue. And I will guide you through it to talk to that person that you have the conflict with, even if it's a past conflict, but still there, even if it's a new or even if it's a future that you have to say something and you're like, how am I going to say it so it doesn't start a conflict? So this is the guide that I'm going to show you. And the guide is going to go through these four stages. The first one, the head, the heart, the needs, and the actions. So listen carefully and write down what is this dialogue that you're going to have with that person that you have a conflict with. The first thing we need to say or to do when we are having a conversation that we do not want to start a conflict, and that might be used at work too, with different wordings, but that can be used at work. So instead of saying, you just attacked me, or you're insulting me, or you are being so obnoxious, or you are being so selfish, that's attacking, okay, just in case. Or you never, or you always, I mean, two very dangerous words, never and always. Is that true that you never do that or you always do that? It's not true. Probably it's not true. But we use them and automatically they start the conflict. Okay, so instead of using those words, those kind of sentences where I'm already judging you, where I'm giving you my truth, that maybe it's not your truth, we're going to start with the observed fact. Something that doesn't give place to interpretation. So when I see that every time I express my opinion, you have the opposite opinion, for example. Yes, so might be that. Or when I see that, I have a good example. So imagine I'm going to use this example. Helen, do you let me use the example with you?
Yes, please.
Thank you. We've worked a lot with Helen and some of the team that is here. So thank you for being here supporting me. Some of the team that is here, we've been working a lot and we've had like even moments that were like very intense where we had a lot of responsibilities and a lot of work to do. So imagine that at that time, I felt like Helen was, you know, she was praising more the other colleagues than me. So I felt a little bit like, I'm not that appreciated by Helen. So that's my feeling. That's my perception. So I could say, so Helen, you always are praising everybody else but me. You don't appreciate me at all. I'm attacking Helen, you see? I'm not letting her like even space. So I might say, when I see that, you talk about Heather or you talk about Helen or you talk about Adam or you talk about, I'm stating a fact, an observed fact. Next one. So that's the part of the brain when we talked about the thoughts. That's what I feel, what I think, but that's, I'm just stating what I see. You write, think about your own conflicts. What could you say to avoid starting attacking that person? What could you say? What is it that you observe as a fact? Write it down. Next step, we go to the feelings. So when I see that, then I feel. So then I feel that I am not that important to you or that you don't see that I am as gifted as the rest of my colleagues. But I am talking about a feeling. I am not saying you are thinking that. I am saying when I see what you do, then I feel that way. So in a way, the person has a margin to defend, to say, no, that was not my intention. So think about what you can say to that person you have the conflict with. This is what I see and this is what makes me feel. Next, it's about the needs. And this is key. We're going to talk in a couple of slides, we're going to talk about the non-fulfilled needs that are the origin of all conflicts. So they need to understand what is the need that is not fulfilled. So In that case, I could say to Helen, because my need for recognition, and that's a basic need. Do not think you do not need recognition. We all need recognition. Because Helen, my need for recognition is not covert. So I'm telling her, I'm being in a way, I'm showing her I have that need. Imagine that she really is not happy with me, because that's the truth. That's why she's not praising me. That's why she's not saying anything to me, because she's really not happy. But the fact that I'm stating my need, she might say, okay, so if you want me to recognize you, I need you to be more proactive. I need you to be more And we can have a conversation, but a constructive conversation, not a reactive, defensive conversation. Hope I'm being clear. Another way of saying that, you could say, because I want, because I search, because I've been waiting, because again, I need or I wish, I would like, but you express you, because I, and stop saying because you did that to me, because then you are going to the other person and you need to assume responsibility. That's what I just showed you with the little drawing.
So, because that need is not covered. That is the part of the need. So think about the need in that conflict you have, that it is not covered. Think about that 1 second. What is it that I need from that person that is not covered? And that's what this conflict is. Maybe I'm not being listened. Maybe I don't feel that I'm being appreciated. Maybe it's just simply because I don't feel heard. And that's the last one. It's about the action. So I've stated what I see. I expressed what I feel. I expressed where my need was. And now, what is it that I want to ask you? What is it? Please, can you? Or would you be ready to? Or could we? Because that could be not only asking you, but like, could we just please, when we argue, like not like go to the level, because sometimes it happens. With my dear husband again, because we're very passionate both, that we go to the, so can we just like breathe? And maybe that's it. That's my petition. It's simply, let's breathe when we see that the things are raising. Whatever it is, each one, you will have your own situation. So I could ask Helen here. So please, can you, when you see that I'm not doing right, would you be so nice to just tell me? And then Helen is like, okay, perfect. When I see that you do something, I'll give you feedback immediately. And I'm happy, she's happy, and I will be performing better. Yes, Helen, what do you think?
Absolutely. I'll do everything you ask, Patricia. But it's good. This is not a real example. This is a pretend example.
Thank you. But this is very important. And I'm going to give you a very silly example, because that was more of a possible example at work. But another thing, and I was laughing with Greg and Helen this morning, saying another real example, I don't know in your houses, but in my house, it's the dishes in the dishwasher. I don't know what happens. Some people think that they go magically inside of the dishwasher and they clean and they go back to the places also magically. So not always happens like that, just for the ones that don't know. But above all, the teenagers think that they really happens. So what I do, and you're going to laugh, but I use that, because if I say, again, you didn't put the dishes, it doesn't happen. And the next time is the same. And I tell you, this lasts for at least a couple of days. Then you have to repeat. But I always say, well, when I see that, you don't put the dishes in the dishwasher. So I'm not saying, you're a lazy person that you do not put, I'm judging. I'm not. When I see that, you do not put the dishes in the dishwasher. Then I feel like, no, it's not the work I do in this house. It's not that much appreciated, because my need for recognition in this house, my need for like seeing that I'm also working apart from taking care of this house is not covered. And I really, or I waited, or I need your appreciation. Please, could you put the dishes in the dishwasher next time? Believe me, it works for at least a couple of days, because they feel like, oh, poor mom, she's right, you know? And I didn't accuse them. Use it, try it. The next slide, it talks about, okay, very clear. We understand we need to take responsibility. We understand we need to say things in a way that they're not provoking and they're not creating a bigger conflict. So obviously, when you are in a moment of anger, or when you're in a moment of this nice guy that I just showed you, it doesn't come out like that. Okay, I know this guy by heart and it doesn't come out like that. But at least when you finish screaming out what you wanted to say, you're like, I know why it didn't work. I should have said it in the way that Patricia told us, but it came out like this. So you still have a way of redirecting that conflict. So that's how it's used. So this circle of influence, circle of concern, some of you already know, but the way I like to use it is that the circle of influence and is the circle of things that are in my hands, is the proactive circle. The circle of concern is a circle of things that are not in my hands, is that reactive circle. So influence is when I say, okay, there's something I don't like, I'm gonna do something about it. The concern is a circle of, I'm very uncomfortable. I don't really like that, but I'm worried and I don't know, and you do nothing. It's like, there's some Flemish expressions that says it's like a hen without a head that will go around in circles.
Headless chicken,
exactly. I never tried it, but that's the expression. So how do we do that? I'm going to show you that with an example, with one of my kids, the middle one, Victor. One day he came home and he said to me, Mom, I have this, we were living in Belgium at that time. And he said to me, Mom, I have this poem in ancient French that I have to learn and I am never going to learn it. It is so difficult. So I looked at him and I said, he was like around, 9 years old, something like that. I looked at him and I said, you're right, Victor, you're never going to learn that. And then he looked at me back and he's like, but you're my mother. You're supposed to be telling me like, but honey, you're going to learn it. Don't worry. I'll help you. We'll do it together. And I'm like, yeah, Victor, but you know what? You don't even believe you're going to learn it. So you're not going to learn it. And then he looked at me back thinking, I know my mom. So he said literally, okay, mom, I know you want to teach me one of your tools or your things that you do in the coaching. So can you just teach it to me, tell me so I can start learning this poem? I'm like, okay. So I explained him that. And I said, in a simple way for a kid, and I said, where are you now, Victor? And he said, circle of concern. And I said, and what would be for you to get yourself in the circle of influence? And he looked at me and said, I could read the poem. I'm like, yeah, great. What else? He's like, I could look in the dictionary and find the words I don't understand. Brilliant. And then he kept going and I said, okay. You go get in your circle of influence alone. You come back when you know the poem. So after an hour and something, he came back and he said, you know what, Mom? Your thing works. And I was laughing alone because I'm like, that's not a thing. It was just you that did it. But he found somehow the way of, getting into it and just doing things, taking responsibility. That's exactly what we said. So in conflicts, if it's an important relationship for you, if it's something that you really care about, then it's your responsibility to do something about it and to try to understand. Yes, the same in life. Something that bothers me, well, what is it in my hands? What can I do instead of staying outside in that circle of concern that doesn't bring me anything? Doesn't produce anything. Still, I want to say that we are human beings. And as human beings, we have the right to be, sometimes we to feel like I want to be a victim today because I just feel like it. So it's your choice, but your choice, do not stay too much in the victim situation, in the circle of concern. And it's your choice to be Calimero. I don't know if you remember that guy. And say always, everything's unfair. Everything that happens to me, it's unfair. Everybody is against me. I cannot do anything. This life is miserable. Or you might have a day like that, but then the day after you wake up and you say, so what can I do to change that? And that is your responsibility. And that's why we were talking about handling conflict with confidence. So I know lots of things. Next thing, and we're almost arriving to the end of it. It's just a pyramid that I love. And you all know the Maslow pyramid. But what I wanted to say with this pyramid, I want you to go back to that conflict you have. And if you realize at the origin of all conflicts, there is a denied need. We've already talked about needs, but this is the truth. There is a denied need. All conflicts. Why do you think there's wars? Whereas sometimes in the beginning of times, we needed food, we needed water. There's still wars because there's some people that don't even have the basics. So if we do have that, that's, you know how this pyramid works. It goes up, up, up. So we do have that, then we need the second one. So how many wars are because of security? We don't feel safe enough. We need shelter, So we get into that war because, or that fight, or with my neighbor because I feel like they leave the door open. And how many conflicts are started because of that denied need? The belonging. Look at that conflict you have. And if it's with somebody in the family or a friend or somebody in your community, a lot of times the conflict starts because that person feels like there is a problem and they don't feel like they belong, or they don't feel like you're making them belong to that. They don't feel that. And that's why it starts a conflict. Because I want you to think about that conflict you have and place yourselves, you and the other person you're in conflict with. Where are you here? What is the part that it's not happening and where you're having a conflict? The self-esteem, you see, the recognition, the mastery, the achievement, the example I was giving you with Helen. It's, I don't feel recognized. So my self-esteem goes lower. And that's why I get into a conflict, because instead of having that conversation I showed you before, I'm just defending myself, or I'm just putting myself in the attack mode. So I'm just like, yeah. Anyway, I don't even want to work here because nah. So that's what I'm doing. So think about it. And finally, it's once we have all of that, so I achieved, I mastered it, I have my recognition, I have all the rest, everything's fine in my life, but now I need to keep growing. And sometimes you are in positions or in situations or in families or whatever, it doesn't matter, where you can't, where you feel like, that's it, I can't keep growing, I can't keep, or they don't let me be creative, or then don't let me feel fulfilled. I will say that in this situation we're living in Spain with COVID, well, we're living in all of us were living that situation. I have a 20-year-old at home. He's so angry with all this confinement thing and everything. And I think, and he's so in conflict with, not fortunately, not that much with us, but just with the world, you know. I think it's this part of him that wants to be free, you know, grow, learn, travel. And it's being, you know, prohibited. He's not being able, he has to stay home, he can't hang out with his friends. So that might be a reason why he might be in conflict with the government, yes, even if it's not a real conflict with a person. So this is the pyramid of needs, and it's just for you to think about that important basic concept that is that when my needs are not fulfilled, then I am not okay. And if I'm not okay and you're not okay because your needs are not fulfilled either, then we'll get into conflict. Otherwise, my needs are not fulfilled, yours are yes, then I need to be assertive. Your needs are not fulfilled, mine yes, then I can be empathetic with you. And to finish, I just have two more slides, but one slide, it's about, after all that we have seen, it's in conflict. It doesn't matter, like, to get into a conflict, what is it? What is the competence that we need to develop the most to be able to handle conflict? What do you think it's the key competence in handling conflict? We talked about, Helen just said something about, I need to ask. Okay, that's brilliant. You need to ask. But what do you need to do after when you ask? And a lot of times we don't do. Listen, listening, Greg, Helen, Phil, listen. Of course, Gaetano, self-control too, very important. But it's the listening part, yes? Because if I ask, but I don't listen, then we're not going to solve that conflict. So for that listening part, I love that dog. For that listening part, I'm going to do a little exercise with you. I'm going to tell you a very short story. And at the end of the story, I'm going to ask you a question. If you do know the story and the exercise, don't answer, okay? But the ones that don't know, you play with me. I'll explain a story. After the story, I'll ask a question. It's a very simple, straightforward exercise. And it's a very short story. So imagine that you're driving a bus and the bus is empty. So you stop the first time and there are like 10 people that come in the bus. The second time you stop, there's like 2 people that go down and there's 3 people that come up. Third time that the bus stops, there is like 5 people that come up, nobody goes down. Fourth time, there's 2 people that come up and 2 people that come down. And the fifth stop, there's like 7 people that come up and nobody is coming down. So the question for you is, what is the shoe number of the driver?
The shoe size, you mean?
The shoe size. Some of you think that you don't have the answer, yes? Some of you are thinking, is she crazy? I don't have the answer. She's supposed to be asking us how many stops or how many people are in the bus at the end. Yeah? Are you thinking that? Some of you. But I'm going to ask Gaetano. Gaetano, you said 42. Why did you say 42? Yes, you were driving. I said at the beginning of my story, imagine that you're driving a bus. And most of us erased that from our brain because we thought she's going to ask something about how many people, how many stops, how many times they come in and out and down and up and etc. So can you imagine if we are here, just us, we're talking about active listening. I put you a picture of a chihuahua with huge ears putting, I'm listening. I told you a very, very tiny short story and still your brain decided that the beginning of the story was not relevant. So it just erased it and focused on the things that thought would want to be important. How is that not going to happen with conflict? So I just wanted to show you that with a simple story and with a very silly example that we do that. And sometimes when we're arguing with our loved ones and they say, I already told you. And you're like, no, you didn't. Maybe they did. Do not tell them that story, but maybe they did. So just so you know, maybe they did tell you something that your brain decided was not that important. So you erased it. And that can also start conflict. Yes. So thank you very much. I just wanted to give that last story to finish in a nice touch and remind you that I had one more slide saying that with conflict, it's interesting to understand what people wait from you. Why is it that it's important to you? What can we do together? So that's a situation. But a lot of what Helen said, a lot of dialogue, a lot of communication, a lot of asking, because if I don't ask, what do? I interpret things and I don't really know what is it that they need from me. So thank you very much and keep calm and resolve conflict. Thank you, Helen, for your support. And thank you all for being here. So that's it for today. So Helen, if you want to add anything, thank you.
Patricia, I just want to say further to everybody's comments that was amazing. And, you know, I feel that the timing as well in the moment, you know, there's a lot of really heightened sensitivity for people going on in their worlds and their environments. And so whether it's at work or whether it's our family or our friends, I think you've given us an anchor, an opportunity to rethink how we might engage. I think the Maslow's hierarchy of needs is very powerful. Yes. When we look at that in the context of where we are today with this conflict, so many of those steps are being challenged by where we are. So you've given us some great tools and techniques. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. So I'm going to just leave the last slide for you. So you know that you can, there's a lot of other interesting webinars. And just you could go to our page, to our website.
Absolutely. So if you know anyone who'd like to benefit from it, please point them to the One MSL community. And we look forward to further webinars with you, Patricia. Thank you. Goodbye,
thank you,
everybody.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.